Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the Tweakments Guide. It's a trusted platform for offering expert and unbiased support and content for consumers looking at aesthetic treatments and skincare. The company's currently raising funds on Crowdcube, so we're going to be discussing the opportunity for the company as well as why they're raising funds at the moment and the opportunity for investors. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Matthew Hindhuff, who is the CEO and co-founder of the Tweakments Guide. Matthew, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me, Jonathan. Good morning.
So this is a really interesting company. I'm just looking at what you've achieved so far with such a small team. I'm looking here, you're a EBITDA margin, your headline EBITDA margin is 30%. So that, you know, that's really good validation of the business model. We're going to be discussing that business model in more detail throughout the podcast. But before we get into it, Matthew, please could you give us a little bit of an introduction and background to yourself, as well as your co-founder, Alice, and what led you to establish the Tweakments Guide in the first place, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So I should probably start with Alice. She's been a beauty and aesthetics journalist for more than 25 years, and she's tried pretty well everything in terms of tweakments. Many people think she invented the word tweakments, which she didn't, but she certainly popularized it. And I think she's regarded by most people, both consumers and within the industry, as the leading non-medical expert on the area. She's got a commitment to educating people, and that has informed our mission as a company. So we want to provide people with objective, clear, science-backed information which helps them to make informed choices and sort of ignore the marketing hype around the sector. My background, I is in finance. I was a qualified accountant. I spent most of my career in banking. I've also been a CFO. And for the last 6 years, I've been the CEO of the Tweakments Guide.
Fantastic. Thank you. So of course, you know, two very different backgrounds there. What was the driving force behind establishing the Tweakment Guides in the first place?
Well, I think I suppose the central thing is the problem that we know that consumers face in this area, which is obtaining good information, and was implied in my last answer. This area is complicated. It's changing fast. And as people probably know, there's extremely poor regulation around it. And then when people come to treatments, it's personal and they're worried about, understandably, about ending up looking weird or overdone. So we set out to meet that need and to provide information which was objective and useful and trustworthy. So in terms of trustworthiness, and what we set out right from the start was to make sure we'd only have good practitioners. So our maxim was we'd only have a practitioner who Alice was happy to treat with her own face. And we'd only talk about products, treatments that we thought were good. And in terms of usefulness, we wanted to provide people with a resource so they could, for example, start with a concern they might have about their eye bags or their jowls or something like that. And then they could go in and look at all the treatments they could do. They could screen them based on whether they were open to having needle-based treatments, whether they were open to having treatments which had downtime. They could screen them by cost. So they could then work out what treatment might work, and then they could find an excellent practitioner located near to them who could administer that treatment. And complementary to Tweakments, we're doing the same thing on skincare, which is an adjacent space. Lots of people will do skincare, but they won't be prepared to try treatments at all. People who try treatments will obviously want to get their skincare right first. We focus on science-backed skincare. And again, we're trying to do the same thing, which is cut through the marketing hype, make people understand there's so many different products out there, make them understand which ones are best value, and so on. And then the feedback that we have, both subjectively, what people say to us, answers to our consumer surveys, and as it were, objectively, that's in terms of the data which shows the engagement with our content across all of our channels, is that we're absolutely successful in providing useful and trusted information, because the engagement stats in all of our channels, our website, our social media, our newsletter, are very much higher than the industry average. So we know we're providing useful information. And above all, and this is central to the question of why we are raising money, is that we've proven ourselves successful in delivering leads.
You've given us a really good overview of the business, which I'd actually like to drill down a little bit deeper into now. And you, of course, mentioned content, your website, your social media. But for listeners that are looking at the treatment guide and wanted to get a really good idea of your business model, could you give us a little bit more detail on your structure, your revenue generation model? And also, if maybe this is something to address in terms of what tweakments actually means, you know, what does it mean in the industry? And then could we tie that into the real pain points that you're trying to solve for your customers, your users, to really give investors a good foundation of where you sit and your business model, please?
Well, what are tweakments? They are aesthetic procedures, so they're non-surgical. So they range from advanced facials through things such as light treatments, laser treatments, through to injectables such as Botox and fillers. And it stops at things using a knife, so cosmetic surgery. Well, the pain points, as I mentioned, there are so many media scare stories about treatments. There are pictures of celebrities looking odd. People want basically to look like a better version of themselves. They want people to say, I'm looking well. They don't want to look odd. They don't want people generally to know that they've had anything done. And these treatments are relatively expensive, so they want to know what's good value, and they want to know, what works best. Our prime revenue streams going forward are going to come from listing practitioners who pay to be listed on our website, and from e-commerce, and also from the listing of brands on our website.
Fantastic. Thank you. So that actually takes me on very nicely, Matthew, into the next point and looking at the market opportunity. So if you're able to give us a bit of insight into the market dynamics that you're operating in, the size of the market opportunity, and what does the competition look like? Who else is there out there which is doing a similar thing to you?
Okay, so in terms of the market, the first thing to say is that it's absolutely booming. We did a survey of 1,500 consumers last year, and we did a similar one a couple of years before that, and that showed that our core market was growing at 14% per annum. That is exactly the same number that came out from a recent British Beauty Council survey. It's also lucrative, and our survey showed people spending an average of £1,800 per annum on treatments and £350 per annum on science-backed skincare. So what that means from our business point of view is that leads are extremely valuable. In terms of the competition, I would say, it depends how you frame competition. The competition for information is primarily kind of PR-led articles in newspapers and magazines or by influencers. They just say, hey, I found this new cool laser. But what they don't really do, which we seek to do, is to provide people with information as to how that laser compares to other lasers, other treatments, so that people can take a sort of holistic view as to what they might want to do. In terms of competition for e-commerce, there are masses of e-commerce sites out there, but ours is very focused on providing people with helpful content to inform what they might want to buy. In terms of other listing services for practitioners, there are a number out there, but what really differentiates us, again, is quality. So we estimate there are perhaps 14,000 aesthetic practitioners in the UK. We only ever would want to list the best 1,000. We want to have people who are not just kind of qualified and safe, but who are actively good. And we spend a lot of time trying to find those people, making sure that they are listed on our site.
We're, of course, speaking today, Matthew, because the Tweetcommits Guide is on Crowdcube. You're currently raising funds to accelerate your next stage of growth. Why is it important for the company to raise funds at this point in time of the company's growth story?
In essence, we think we've got an opportunity to create a really profitable business on the foundations that we've so far built. We are profitable already, but we are self-funded, so we just don't have the capital to do a whole raft of specific things that we know would have a great return on investment. Well, I should also perhaps say that we are raising money under EIS, so people get the tax relief from that. And I think perhaps worth making the point that because we're profitable, all the money we're raising will go kind of, as it were, straight into the bloodstream. So it's all going to go onto things such as advertising, employing the sales team, improving our systems, all of which we think will create a much more profitable and robust business.
That does take me on to the next point here, and it's always something that investors like to know a little bit more about. And you did kindly allude to it there, Matthew, but you know, in terms of the funds raised, you're of course going to this with a plan. How are you going to strategically deploy these funds to achieve your longer term goals?
I'd say there's a host of specific things, but if we take the practitioner listings, at the moment, we estimate that the value of a new patient lead to a practitioner is around £1,000, because people sort of keep going back for their Botox, they go back for other treatments. And that's certainly borne out by what people are paying to Google on it for pay-per-click ads, which cost about £75 to £120. And those are far less qualified leads than we're able to deliver. We know anecdotally that we're already delivering a decent number of leads to our listed practitioners, but we don't have the systems to prove it. So the capital we're going to use is going to be used in this area for various things. We're going to obviously increase the number of patient leads we deliver by being able to spend on things like advertising our listing services to consumers. We're going to put in place better systems so we can effectively track it. We're going to employ a sales team who can then, you know, take all this evidence to the practitioners, and thereby we will increase the number of listings we have on the site, and we'll increase the return per listing. Then on e-commerce side, that is a very lucrative business. There's 45% gross margins on average on e-commerce. We work with a fulfillment partner, so we don't have to hold stock. They're very good at kind of nudging people into reordering when they know that they will have run out of whatever face cream it is they're using. And so what we need to do then is to just focus on delivering new customers. And there's an entire e-commerce toolkit of things you can try, from promotions to marketing to using different channels to, you know, trying different types of content. But we just, because we're capital constrained, we haven't employed people with an e-commerce background. We haven't had money to spend on advertising. And so we're confident that we're going to be able to grow that source of revenue when we have capital. The third thing we're going to broadly spend money on is content. So that's obviously the engine of our business. And with additional capital, we can employ more contributors, we can go after new demographics, and men, younger women, people with different skin tones, because some treatments are suitable for different skin tones more than others. We're going to go into adjacent spaces. I mentioned cosmetic surgery, we'll go into wellness. We're going to give love to different channels such as TikTok, which we're hardly on at all at the moment, YouTube, and we're going to different geographies, both different regions within the UK and international. The final area that I should mention, although we haven't really developed our plans about what we're going to do, so it's not in our projections, but where we see massive potential is in data. Brands and practitioners will really value this. We have the potential to harvest significant amounts of first-party data And we think there's sort of gold in them, their hills, but we just haven't worked it through yet.
Indeed, indeed. You know, e-commerce and data in this digital environment is vital. And it's quite interesting to note that you haven't put that in to your current projections. So that offers quite a nice potential piece of upside in the future. So thank you for mentioning that, Matthew. So we did touch on the sector a little bit earlier on in the podcast, but I'd really like to get your view now on, you know, the outlook for the sector and where you see it going from here.
Yes, as I mentioned, it's growing much faster than the wider economy, which makes it one of the most attractive consumer markets at the moment. And people assume that it's a luxury that might slow down, but the data just shows the opposite. And spending's proven resilient. It's fairly price insensitive. The other thing is, as I also mentioned, it is diversifying. So it's no longer just for the core market of 40 plus women. Men are getting into it, younger people. So the core market is growing, but it's also broadening, which I think makes the growth in the market more robust. Then the other thing which we find really interesting is the international angle. The UK is a great place to base a media business, partly because of the language and the time zone, but in our sector, even more so, paradoxically, as a result of the lack of regulation, which means that many brands will trial their new treatments here. And so we've written about most things that are out there. And a significant portion of our traffic already comes from overseas, particularly obviously from English-speaking countries like Australia and the US. So we've got a number of ideas moving forward, how we will be able to move into those markets in a low-cost way, leveraging these the relationships we've already got with brands who are generally international and with practitioners. Alice knows a lot of the top practitioners in these other countries.
That's particularly noteworthy as well, that overseas and global expansion is always something I know investors like to keep an eye out for. And to finish off now, Matthew, and you know, this is something that of course investors always want to get a insight into. You know, there's no guarantees with a potential exit plan, but investors always like to get an idea of what your thinking is and how you actually achieve that. So, you know, where do you see an exit coming from for investors that are coming into this round, and have you got any potential time frame in mind?
Yes, thank you. Well, the most likely exit that we see is a sale to a larger media business, and we're very clear about what the criteria are of businesses like that when looking at businesses like ours. So what they particularly like are businesses which are niche content businesses, which are in niches that are lucrative and where the business dominates that niche because of its editorial credibility. They like it where the business has multiple channels so that they can reach different parts of the audience in different ways. They like them when they've got international potential, where they can monetize their content in a variety of different ways, where they've got decent systems. So if you look at where we are now and you mark us against those criteria, we already score highly on a number of them. And where we don't, that's basically what we're planning to do with this money. So the understanding of where we need to get to has set the tram lines for our business plan. And we think that within 3 years, we will be in a position where we'll be a very attractive acquisition candidate. That's not to say that's what we're looking to do. We're trying to create a robust business that could keep going, you know, ad infinitum, if that's the decision that we wanted to take. But we think that 3 years is a realistic time frame for our exit.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you very much, Matthew. Just as a note to listeners, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there'll be a link through to the Tweakment Guides crowdfunding page on Crowdcube. You'll be able to get further information there, have a look at some of their stats, and of course get their pitch deck. So anybody interested in finding out more, do follow that link and have a look at their page, as I say, on Crowdcube. So Matthew, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks so much. That was great.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.